Welcome to the Thursday edition of Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein with you today, and I've got a fun show today talking a lot about First Friday, about books, talking to authors, talking to booksellers, and talking to Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up. We'll have Sarah Isto and Nicole Stellan O'Donnell in here talking about a presentation they're making Saturday at the library. Also, we're going to have Aaron Suring here from Alaska Robotics. They're doing a First Friday opening, announcing and selling the new book by Sarah Asper Smith and Mitch Watley, I Would Tuck You In, a fun children's book, beautiful children's book. First Friday happening at the Franklin Street Gallery at the Baranoff. We'll be talking to folks about that. And also, as I mentioned, Nancy DeCherney is going to be here for Arts Up. It's all ahead during a Juno afternoon. And ahead for us today is more snow showers with the snow accumulation 2 to 4 inches and numerous snow showers in the forecast for tonight with snow accumulation 1 to 3 inches. Lows around 19 degrees, mostly cloudy skies with scattered snow showers for tomorrow and decreasing clouds and scattered snow showers for Friday night. Now here's National Native News.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The White House hosted its fourth annual Tribal Nations Conference in Washington, D.C. Wednesday. Matt Laszlo reports.
Many tribal leaders in this crowd breathed a sigh of relief when President Obama won his re-election battle this November. In introducing the president, Chairman Brian Gladysby of the Squamish Nation explained why Indian country is behind President Obama.
And I can honestly stand here and tell you that the last 4 years have been the best years for Native Americans that I have seen from any administration in the history of the United States.
In his brief remarks, the president reminded tribal leaders of some of the progress his administration has made.
And today, because we've made sure that the conversations here have translated into action, we can point to signs of real progress. We focused on justice and tribal sovereignty. Longstanding legal disputes like the Cobell case have been resolved. I signed into law the Tribal Law and Order Act, which is helping to fight crime. These are all important steps, but we've got more work to do.
But not every leader is optimistic. On Wednesday, numerous cabinet secretaries made lots of promises to tribal leaders. Richard McLeod, the tribal chairman of the Turtle Mound Band of Chippewa in North Dakota, says he's skeptical.
You got to remember, in places like this, they tell you what you want to hear. I want them to tell me what we need to hear. So right now they're telling all the leaders, this is what we want to hear. Is it actually going to happen? Is it going to be reality? Time will tell.
But many leaders are hailing the progress and believe the administration is acting in good faith. Shane Chaparoso is a tribal chairman from San Diego.
From last year to now, I've seen a little bit more change in the good direction for Indian country. You're taking from land to trust for different reasons, for homes, you know, for economic development. I've seen tribes that were landless now that have gotten land and trust.
The big fear hanging over Indian country is looming budget cuts, which we'll explore on tomorrow's program. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Some First Nations are concerned about the Canadian government's budget, which lawmakers have been dealing with this week. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
The omnibus bill includes measures that have angered some First Nations leaders. They say it will undermine their treaty rights and hurt their lakes and rivers. The chiefs say Bill C-45 will make changes to the Navigable Water Protection Act, which applies to 40,000 lakes and 2.5 million rivers. Those changes are contentious because they remove thousands of lakes and streams from federal protection under the law, and many are on First Nations territories. The chiefs have also accused the government of not doing enough to consult with First Nations people on the omnibus bill and other legislation. So when they tried to enter the parliament buildings, there was a confrontation with security personnel. Chief Wallace Fox of the Onion Lake Cree Nation led the group and believes their point was made.
They got the message loud and clear. They've been served, put on notice that we will not put up and tolerate with any more their legislation shoving down our throats. We are going to make a stand. Today is only beginning.
The chiefs say the section of the bill that will strip environmental protection from lakes and streams is basically declaring open season on all parts of Canada, but especially on First Nations territory. Chiefs say if the government of Canada continues to act in an arrogant and abusive manner, there is going to be more pushback. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
During this month in 1882, the Hopi Reservation was created in Arizona. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use Pick, Click, Give when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kowanic Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Kowanic is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
Oh, The Book I Write. That's a little spoon there. Great band. We've got a couple of great local authors with us right now, and also Jonas Lamb from the library. Jonas, thanks for bringing these folks in and arranging this very cool presentation happening tonight. Sarah Isto and Nicole Stellan O'Donnell are here, and Sarah's done a historical work of fur farms of Alaska. And Nicole has a collection of poetry. It's a novel written in poetry.
Yeah,
really interesting approach. So maybe, Jonas, I'll have you start off. Tell me a little bit about the concept behind the presentation, and then we'll talk to these authors about their specific work.
Sure. Well, kind of the idea for this presentation and workshop series came out of 49 writers, or a group of up in Anchorage. It's a nonprofit, and they bring together a lot of great folks from the writing community to offer workshops, to do readings. And I saw that they were offering a workshop this summer that really caught my interest, maybe at a personal level as a librarian, as a poet, and as a reader. And it was going to be hosted at the Anchorage Museum in their little reading room archive there. And they were going to be introduced to the participants to historical collections, to archival photographs from early Alaska, letters from pioneers to their families down in the lower 48. And then they were going to look at those materials with the idea of going forward and writing creative work based on that. At the time, I had just read Nicole's novel in verse, Steam Laundry, and had been doing some fur farm research of my own, and came across Sarah's book. And thought, this would be a great group, a great tandem to get together here in Juneau and offer a reading for the community and possibly a workshop. And fortunately, even with my very loose suggestion for a workshop, I managed to get them both in this room.
Well, Sarah, just to start with you, fur farms, the history of fur farms in Alaska. Tell me a little bit about what caught your interest about researching that and eventually writing a book about it.
Well, I wrote a book previously, and when I did that, it was a family memoir, and I received from a cousin a stack of essays written by my uncle for a senior citizen's writing class in his retirement home, and they didn't have titles or anything, but to my surprise, two of them talked about his years as the territorial veterinarian in Alaska, 1930 to 1940, the only veterinarian in the territory. Hired by the governor.
The entire territory,
yes,
of Alaska.
That's right.
Wow.
And he was hired by the governor to take care of the fur farms. Well, this is pretty interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's fascinating, isn't it? It's an area you wouldn't, as a layperson, I don't immediately think, oh, well, yeah, I remember that period where there's all these fur farms. They must have had to have veterinarians. I mean, you wouldn't think about the support they would have to have. But of course they would. They're raising this livestock. Yeah, right.
Well, at the time, it was the third largest industry in Alaska, and it was having trouble. So that was why the governor hired the veterinarian. So I thought I would go down to the state library and read about this. And what I discovered was that the materials were very scattered. It was very hard to find out very much. And then I got really interested in it, and I decided that since no one else had done it, I needed to gather all this together and try to collect it and make a book. And it only took me 4 years.
Well, yes. Just nothing like a snap of the fingers, and there it is. A book just fell together. Well, we'll talk more about that, but I wanted to ask you, Nicole, to me, the idea of writing a novel, it would be mortifying and like a huge task, and writing even just a poem would be a huge task. So writing a novel out of poems, to me, seems like you're really creating a mountain for yourself.
But you do wind up with the problems of both a novelist and a poet, and in this case, a nonfiction writer, too, since it was based on historical people. So I did set out a challenge for myself, the characters were interesting enough to keep me going.
Do you come from it from what's your main? Are you usually a poet?
I'm a poet. Okay. Yeah. So the history part is the part that I was adding on to writing poetry. And what I did is I went into the archives at UAF, and I found Sarah Ellen Gibson, who came to Fairbanks in 1903. She was the sixth woman to show up in the camp when it started, and she was never a big success, and that's why I got interested in her, because we always hear about Belinda Mulrooney or all the women of the Klondike who then ran a roadhouse and became very successful, and she wasn't, and her life is really well documented because her son's papers were preserved. So she's kind of an accidental treasure
but
to find
so
in archives.
Representative of what just a normal person who didn't become this master of industry.
All the people we know who wound up going back or wound up dying in Alaska during the gold rush, she's one of those people. And so that really interested me and kept me going through her story.
Yeah, and you feel like sort of an undiscovered little gem there, right?
And the arc of her story, when I started writing about her, I thought it would just be a sequence of a few poems. But there was so much there. There were 600-some letters. There was a lot of information. She had two sons who one continued to live in Fairbanks. And so there was so much that it became a novel written in poetry.
And is it written in her voice? Did you sort of find her voice in the poems?
Some of the poems are. Some of the poems are in her son's voices, her lover's voice, a woman she worked with. There are a lot of different voices in the book, so it switches around. But
how would you describe it for someone who's a reader of this? Sometimes some of the best poetry is not immediately apparent, and there's many hidden layers in the language of poetry. So, but then trying to do that and create a narrative in a novel seems like could be confusing if it's not handled correctly.
Well, it is narrative poetry. So the story pulls you through. There's not much that is hidden, or deliberately hidden, but I hope there's a lot of that stuff there too. It also has some historical documents and photos that support parts of the narrative that's going on, but it's definitely the focus is that it tells one big story.
Right.
Yeah.
And Sarah, as you developed your work, did you try to maintain that focus on the family figure that you kind of started that story with, your uncle, or did you just end up kind of doing a broad historical research and make it a broader book?
Well, I ended up with a much broader book because although I was particularly fond of this uncle, and he was interesting, there are some really fascinating people. The first man to transplant Siberian foxes to the Aleutian Islands did it 7 years after Bering's expedition, and he was sort of the first person to do it, and he was a fascinating character. And so it turns out that over two centuries of fur farming in Alaska, there are a lot of interesting people.
Centuries. I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, the last farm closed in 1993. First one, 1749. So,
tell me what animals were typically being raised.
Well, at first it was mainly foxes, silver foxes, and Arctic blue foxes. But then people became very experimental, even before the First World War, and they were raising mink and muskrat and lynx and ermine and martens and European finch and nutria and raccoons and skunks. They began trying animals from different parts of the country to see what they could do. But the big, the most successful ones were fox farmers and mink farmers.
And is it just the obvious nature of the climate of Alaska that makes it so conducive to this long-running industry of farming, or is there a certain reason why Alaska became the place for it? I mean, I guess it's just because those animals' fur grew well in the cold weather and that kind of thing? Is that...
Well, that's true, but the thing that really controlled the strength of the industry was the fur market. And during the 1920s, there were people who made a great deal of money. Many of them were selling breeding animals. They weren't selling pelts. They were selling to other farmers. It's
like a pyramid scheme.
Ponzi.
Kinda. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes, so the market went up and down, and that was what really controlled...
Were there government incentives, that sort of thing? Were people being encouraged to come up to Alaska to start fur farms?
Well, I don't know that they were being encouraged to come up, but once they were here, the territory and the U.S. government saw this as an important industry. And so if you leased an island for a fur farm, you only had to pay $25 a year for the first 3 years, and then you paid a bigger fee, but that was, you know, there were incentives.
It's interesting to think about this time before the gold rush in Alaska, you know, that there was this industry that in some cases it was a very successful industry. There were these people that were long time living here that were not native Alaskans but had come here to seek their fortune in this other industry that has nothing to do with gold.
That's soft
right.
gold, I heard Sarah
soft
refer
gold.
To
yes,
it as.
Yeah.
Soft,
yes.
Pedible gold.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there were, in the Aleutians, there were a lot of Aleut natives who were fur farmers.
Oh, okay. So it was also a native industry as well.
Not everybody was from outside. Yeah.
I see. Yeah. Is there a time period, I would ask you the same thing, is there a time period that attracts you the most, that you found the most fascinating when you were researching this?
Mm-hmm. Well, the 1920s were, because prices were high, there were poachers, there were scammers, there were laws, there were, the Tlingits were angry about losing islands, the Aleuts were forming village co-ops and making big money. You know, it was a time of great ferment. There were more than 700 fur farms, and the furthest north was in Barrow.
Okay,
so
wow.
It was the whole territory.
Right. And for you, the time period is really around the gold rush kind of era, right?
Yeah, around the gold rush. Gibson followed her husband. He went up the Chilkoot Trail that first winter, and she followed him the next year to Dawson and brought their two sons, and he told her, don't take the trail, take the boat. And so she came up the boat, and then he wasn't a very good husband when they were in San Francisco, and he continued to be a bad husband, so she left him with another man for Fairbanks. And so it was that idea of running away that attracted me. So
yes.
The idea of her leaving things and setting out kind of on her own in 1903. So that whole time period, maybe 1897 to 1906, is what the book looks at.
Yeah, fascinating. Well, give me the details a little bit once again,
sure.
Jonas, so people can get involved in this fascinating discussion of these two really interesting books.
Yeah, so this evening we'll have Fur Farms and Steam Laundry, an evening with Sarah Isto and Nicole O'Donnell. That'll be at 7 o'clock at the Downtown Library. Both authors that you've heard speaking this afternoon will be sharing from those works, as well as Nicole has promised us, well, not promised us, she's alluded to the existence of some new work that she may share with the group.
Right.
And that's at 7 o'clock at the Downtown Library. And then tomorrow, if you're interested, there are still some spaces available in, we're having it's a historic materials research writing workshop, sort of a hybrid. We're calling it Innovation and Inspiration with Historic Materials. That's going to happen at noon, and it starts at the Alaska State Historical Library, which is on the 8th floor of the State Office Building. If you're in the lobby and you don't know where to go, there's a library on both sides of the atrium. Ask a librarian. They'll get you in the right spot.
But can always ask a librarian.
We're good for that.
Right?
We're good for directions. The bathroom is over there.
Right.
And so we'll have a chance to get a little tour of the closed stacks there and an introduction to some of the materials, the treasures that live there, and then an opportunity to write based on some of the materials that participants find. And then we're going to regroup later in the afternoon at the Downtown Library for more writing. So it's essentially a half-day workshop. These things go for like $150 to $200 on the market. But at your public library, these are free events. So
such a bargain.
Join us.
Such a bargain.
If you want to register for that workshop, you got to give me a call at 586-0442 or send me an email, jonasl@juno.org.
Well, Jonas and Nicole and Sarah, thanks so much for coming in, and good luck with the presentation tonight. Sounds fascinating.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. Magnetic Fields there with the Book of Love. We're learning all about different books here today. Fascinating to hear about those historic books. And the next one we want to talk about is a really beautifully done children's book that is just out. And we're with Aaron Suring, who's one of the people who runs Alaska Robotics. Aaron, thanks so much for coming in, man.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And this is a new book by Sarah Asper-Smith, a longtime friend and collaborator of yours at Alaska Robotics.
Yeah, she's been our crew for a long time, and she and her husband put together this book. It's beautiful. It's touching.
It's awesome.
Really,
it's called I Would Tuck You In, and it has a beautiful – I'm holding it right now. It's a kind of children's book size book, you know, one of those nice books. And it's got fantastic paintings from Mitch on it, and it has a couple of sea otters on the cover. And then it goes through, and it describes how a mother would treat its little one, whether it was a hummingbird or a bat or a porcupine or a humpback whale or
any kinds of different Alaskan animals.
Many Alaskan
animals. Pulling it together.
So tell me about, do you know the process that these guys went through? Did you kind of follow along with what they were doing?
I was there the whole way. And so when the book finally came out, I mean, I'd already been seeped in it, but then seeing it in the final product and reading it through again, just kind of like, it got to me again.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow, that's adorable. It's so good.
You got to Aaron. Way to go, guys. Tell me about their process. Do you know, were the paintings done first? Did they really think of a story narrative first? How did they approach that? Do you know?
This is actually kind of based on some cards that Sarah did a long time ago, and they were, individual cards. I mean, they weren't all these animals. They were different animals and stuff. There was like a marmot that I would whistle as you walked by, which maybe is not necessarily appropriate for a kid's book. So that one didn't make the final cut here, but there was a series of cards that Sarah did illustrated, and then...
And we've seen the different, like, T-shirts and cards and things like that Sarah's done about the groupings of animals, of crows, and those kinds of things.
When the publisher, had that book, and they were looking for another one, Sarah pitched this one to them, and they were looking for a different art style from what they had in the cards, and that's where Mitch came in.
Well, I'm married to an artist.
I just happen to know somebody that is really brilliant at this.
I know a guy.
Yes.
I know a guy.
This is his first kid's book, and he definitely had some frustrations with the publisher and how that all works, the back and forth and stuff, but it just turned out gorgeous, and I'm so.
Well, I mean, so I'm right in assuming that Mitch did the paintings for this, and then Sarah did the layout and the fonts and all that stuff, and
she
did all the graphic art kind of stuff. So the thing about Mitch's work that's so great is that he's able to capture when he wants to, a certain whimsy, a certain personality in any creature or any person or animal that he is painting.
And the environment, too. I mean, some of his paintings are just
absolutely gorgeous landscapes and things like that.
And seascapes, and it's like,
But it's nice to – it's nice what I love about what he does is that he's able – I'm looking at a picture of these boreal owls right now. So it's a picture where clearly the mother owl is loving the little owlet, but it doesn't overly anthropomorphize it. It doesn't make it
they're
doesn't
still
give
animals.
Them human eyes. It doesn't make it overly overly cartoonish. It's incredibly accurate representation of the owls and beautifully represented. But it really looks like an owl you could see on a branch. in a forest in Alaska. And it's I don't know. I appreciate that about the work. Mm-hmm. Do you know, then they also, did you know what kind of research they had to do to actually get the little factual notations on the bottom of each page too? Because it not only keeps the narrative, the story going, it also gives a little bit of a fact about
each of the animals.
About each of the animals.
And stuff along the way. So it's just, she spent some time in the library. She spent a lot of time on the internet Googling and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
And that was actually part of, like, selection of the animals, too, is, like, I've got this great coupling, but I don't have any good facts for them. This one's so much better, but it doesn't fit quite as well.
So it's just kind of like boring.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that.
No way. Wolves are boring. There's no good factoid on them. No. But so let's see. Humpback whales. We'll read this one. If you were a humpback whale, I would sing a song to soothe you, is what the mother is saying. Mm-hmm. And it says on the bottom, because humpback whales don't have real vocal cords, the songs they sing come from pressing air through their nasal passage.
Right.
Wow. That's kind of how I sing. Doesn't everyone sing that way?
I actually think mine comes from somewhere else. Maybe out of my ears or something else.
Comes from somewhere entirely else. Well, Sarah Asper-Smith, and she's done – this is her second children's book. Is that right?
Yeah. She had the Smack of Jellyfish one before that. So, yeah, it's the Collective Nouns A to Z book.
Right.
So that's
And now this one here, it's Meeting the Animals of the Northern Wilderness. I would tuck you in, Sarah Asper-Smith and Mitch Whatley. Tell me about Alaska Robotics' role and what you guys are going to do tomorrow.
So, yeah, we're having her down for Gallery Walk, both of them down. We're going to have the art from the book. These are just gorgeous paintings. And so we're going to have prints done by Riccio over at Lemon Creek Digital. We're going to have those up on the wall, and they're gorgeous and big and
prints from the book?
From the book, yes.
Oh,
so
awesome.
This is the art of the book is what we're doing.
Oh,
so it's
that's
a book
really
release,
cool.
But it's also art show.
Wow.
And so those will all be up, and there will be prints available, and they'll be there to sign books and stuff too. So that's our Gallery Walk experience.
That's going to be
great. That's what we're going to have there.
And the last Gallery Walk you did had another great local author here, Dave Hunsecker.
We're on a good run.
with the North End of the World.
Yes.
And that is a beautiful graphic novel as well. So check that out when you're at Alaska Robotics. Any other good hot commodities coming through Alaska Robotics right now in the graphic novel or art area?
Well, and I think next week Pat's finally going to get some new stuff out too, so...
That's
keep
exciting.
Back.
All right. Yeah. And then what's the hot new graphic novel everyone's talking about? Is there a new series or is there a new character? Is there a new thing that's kind of capturing people right now or a hot seller?
I'm really looking forward to the Saga. Is a new book by Brian K. Vaughan, and he's done some really good stuff. And that's kind of got a lot of buzz to it right now.
Oh,
so.
Okay. That's what everyone at Comic-Con or some place like that is talking about.
Yes. I'll nod and smile.
All right. What's all happening at Alaska Robotics? Their shop is over by the Gross Alaska 20th Century Theater, right next door to it there.
Down on Front Street there.
Right there on Front Street. The name of the book is I Would Tuck You In. You'll get to meet Sarah Asper-Smith and Mitch Whatley. Get your copy signed and maybe signed over as a personalized special Christmas gift for some little kid or maybe a mom or dad that you know. It's a beautiful book and make a great gift. And
yeah, it's a perfect nighttime story. And yeah.
Aaron, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah,
man.
Thanks for having me.
I would tuck you in, Aaron.
Aw.
I would.
Thanks, Andy.
It's true. Here's Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 6th of December, 2012. It is St. Nicholas Day today. And if you were in Germany and you were a child, you might have polished your shoes last night and then put them out in front of the front door. And during the night, if you had been good, St. Nicholas would fill the shoes with little gifts, little candies and oranges and nuts. 1768, on this date, the first volume of the Encyclopedia Britannica was published, and it kept publishing until this past March, when the president of Britannica announced they would no longer put out a print edition. They would only be online. It was on this date, 1884, the Washington Monument was finally completed. It was begun in 1848. They worked on it for 8 years, and then work stopped. It stood unfinished for 20 years. Then the Corps of Engineers took up the project in 1876. At the time, it was the tallest building in the world at 555 feet. But 5 years later, the Eiffel Tower went up, and that was taller. Though the monument is still the tallest obelisk in the world, and it is the tallest building made of stone. It's made of white marble and granite, and if you look at it closely, you can see a slight color change about 150 feet up, and that's where work stopped back in 1856. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "I Think That I Shall Never See a Poem Lovely as a Tree," Joyce Kilmer, born in New Brunswick, New Jersey, 1886. It's the birthday of the man who took the famous photograph of the sailor kissing a woman in a white dress in Times Square at the VJ Day celebration, 1945. Alfred Eisenstadt, born in Tchef, Poland, 1898. It's the birthday of the daughter of Marie and Pierre Curie, Eve Curie, born in Paris, 1904. Her parents, famous scientists, Irene became a concert pianist and a music critic. And then, as her mother, Marie Curie, lay dying of leukemia, the daughter nursed her mother through her illness. And in 1937, she published a biography of her mother, Madame Curie, which was made into a film starring Greer Garson, and which was a great inspiration for generations of girls who were interested in science. And it was on this date in 1923 that President Calvin Coolidge had the honor of giving the very first presidential address that was broadcast on the radio. It was a speech to Congress, and reception was so clear that listeners could hear the rustling of his papers. Here's a poem for today, a poem by Raymond Carver, entitled Rain. Woke up this morning with a terrific urge to lie in bed all day and read. Fought against it for a minute, then looked out the window at the rain and gave over. Put myself entirely in the keep of this rainy morning. Would I live my life over again? Make the same unforgivable mistakes? Yes, given half a chance, yes. A poem by Raymond Carver, Rain, from All of Us, the Collected Poems, published by Alfred A. Knopf, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering articles from international writers about finances, art, food, wine, culture. You can celebrate the weekend at subscribe.wsj.com/getweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall. Seasonal changes may cause muscle strains and sprains. Ron's Apothecary carries a selection of resources for recovery. First aid kits, healing ointments, braces, and more. Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow.
There's a bright golden haze in the studio right now, I'll tell you that. Shona Strasser and Art Roach from Perseverance Theater with me. Shona's the director of the What's Getting Rave Reviews, Oklahoma, in the last weekend here, Shona. This is it.
That's right. This is it.
After light at the end of the tunnel.
5 week run. This is the final weekend.
And you've got numerous sold-out shows. I think that people need to get their tickets, I guess, is what I'm getting at here.
Yeah, well, pretty much, I got to say that, this is the last weekend. We've got Thursday,
Tonight's Thursday, right? Today's Thursday, yes. So we have a show tonight.
Yes.
We have a show tomorrow night. We have a show on Saturday night. These are all 7:30 curtains. And Sunday at 2 p.m. And Saturday and Sunday are actually sold out.
Okay.
However, pretty much everybody who's been showing up at the door, we've been able to get in. So that's a good thing.
You can try your luck, maybe.
Right,
but
exactly.
But really,
Thursday, tonight
Thursday
we have seven
Friday.
Tickets left, so there's still some good room tonight. And then tomorrow night we have 22 seats left.
Okay.
So tomorrow night's really the gold.
Yeah.
Go for the gold.
That's the one.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, how's it been? Tell me about, now that you're able to look back a little bit. I know it's not over yet, but, you know, how's the run gone for you? Everything I've heard has been fantastic.
Well, yeah. People, you know, the cast and the crew and the band are, I have actually not seen in a while the kind of bonding that this group has done before. And I wonder if that's because it's really sunny in the theater. They're all kind of happy songs except for that one really sad guy.
There has to always be one of those.
There has to be, yeah. You know, antagonist.
That's all right.
Okay. Yes. But, you know, and so that's really great. And their energy kind of it comes off of the stage and their camaraderie. And that's been a really nice thing to watch. And I feel pretty lucky to have been a part of that.
That's a really interesting thing that you just said, though, to me, which is that because it's a play that takes place in the sun a lot,
mm-hmm.
You actually feel probably cheerier and happier as a group, right? You
know,
it's all nice and bright all the time.
That's right. And, you know, it's bright in that building.
Yeah.
And it's warm and it's cozy and, right. You know, and of course we're all taking off gloves and hats and so all these things and then going into this really hot temperature, you know,
right.
Place. But, yeah, it's been a lovely run. It's been nice to touch base with audiences and, you know, Juno audiences are great that way. They're really vocal about everything, you know.
Yeah.
So
were there some unexpected challenges that came along during the production of it? And I know that you had a couple of last minute cast changes that you had to fit in and things like that, which on a musical seems like a really steep hill to climb.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a classical musical. And because of that, the dance demands are pretty much the really high. And so it's not like anybody can come in and dance this show. And that's something that we've learned as a, mm-hmm. as a group of producers, just ways to think about how you do that next time, as far as making sure that choreography is known by many more people.
That's really interesting to me because, you know, from my standpoint as an audience member, I would think, oh, the singing is the hard thing. But from your standpoint, maybe it's the dancing that was more challenging.
Or yeah.
I guess they're both. They're both
yeah. They're both
at a high
hard,
level.
But I think
yeah.
in Juno, what we have as a base talent here, we have a lot of fabulous singers. And, you know, it's shown kind of over and over again in, like, Juno Lyric Opera,
sure.
You know, and all these places. And so we have that talent a lot. And we have Juno Dance Unlimited, but they're working with a younger group of people. So once you kind of get into people who are a little bit older, maybe they don't have as much dance training or... You know,
yeah,
so
right.
That's kind of what we found is that it's a lot of dance. And our choreographer, you know, she's hot here from New York City. Like she's got it going on. And she's not taking anything lightly. You know what I mean? She's hardcore.
She's also not taking any prisoners, I thought is what you're going to say.
I was going to say that.
That's true, too. Yeah.
Well, Art, give us a little preview about maybe some of the other stuff that's coming up as the season continues here.
It's great doing this classic musical because we haven't done one in a long time, and it's been fun to hear about it. So prepare for a left turn after the new year because it's going to go in another direction. We're doing Harold Pinter's play Betrayal, and Pinter is a British dramatist who won the Nobel Prize for Literature, and I think of British writers who write for the theater other than Shakespeare. Shakespeare's pretty good. Pinter's
I've
also
heard of
pretty
him.
Good.
Yeah,
yeah. And this is
it's
his
supposed
most,
to be great. I haven't read
yeah,
any of it.
He's
but.
Okay. I don't know. Call theater and they're up. But Betrayal is his best known work, and it's kind of a romantic whodunit, I call it. It's an affair between a wife and her husband's best friend, and then the husband is the third character in the show. And it's told backwards. So usually if you're an audience member, you know a little bit more about what's going on in the scene than the characters do, which is really fantastic. And you end up working from the breakup to the seduction. It's a fantastic, fantastic piece.
Wow.
Featuring Shirley
really
Strasser,
interesting.
directed by Boston Christopher, who directed The 39 Steps
And who played
season.
Lenny in Of Mice and Men. Yeah. Was wonderful in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a great theater artist.
Terrific. And knows a lot about acting. It's an actor's piece. Really excited about that. And then, you know, I always look for something that's a little hot outside. So if you lived in a larger community with a lot of regional theaters, you'd be able to see plays like this. And I'll find you one every year. And this play this year is Seminar by Teresa Rebeck. So it tells the story of a writing class by this kind of really accomplished writer who hasn't published in a long time. And he's charging a lot of money for people with great potential and backgrounds in English who want to write, and helping them with his industry connections and his know-how and his really, really high standards. And it's a really interesting story. And eventually you find out why he hasn't published and what's wrong with him.
And Alan Rickman
originated that role. So this play closed on Broadway in May, and we called him up and said, are regional rights available? And sure enough, they said, for you, sure. and it'll be widely produced, I'm sure. Teresa Rebeck's a great writer, and pretty long list of plays that she's written. I'm thinking of Mauritius, or she wrote Spinning into Butter. I think there's a number of good plays. And
Bad
she's written
Dates,
a lot for TV. Bad Dates, great one. She was the lead writer on Smash, that TV series about theater that started out. She's written for NYPD Blue and other things. You've probably heard her work if you watch much American television.
And it's interesting because it's like a different pace of theater, you know?
Yeah.
It's really quick. It's fast, quick-witted. It's very, very smart and not being too and not too highbrow either.
Pretty good.
The Alan Rickman character, the scathing nature of his reviews is really – I got to read this play
it's
and
brutal.
Really brutal and really, you know, really – funny in that sort of brutal, scathing and way. And so, yeah, really interesting stuff.
Incredibly honest. And there's 420-something characters who are all trying to get started in their creative lives. And they're very, very well written. Very, very well written. And it's a terrific cast. So
cool.
I think it'll be good. It's very funny. And then the world premiere this year is something I'm really excited about. We're honored to be part of a consortium of four theaters around the country. LATC is one of them in Los Angeles. And Pillsbury House is one of them in Minneapolis. They're an African-American theater. And then the University of Florida in the Seminole part of Florida in Tampa is the fourth producer, and then us. And it's a play written by Marcus Gardley in the Black Seminole community in the historic period of 1850, 1870. And there's a little flashback to 1820s in Florida. And it involves Native American characters, which is one reason it came to us, and African American characters. And it tells the story about how differences, especially differences of race, but other kinds of differences too, can be overcome by love. It's an amazing work. He's kind of magic realism on stage and a real hot up-and-coming writer. I think we're lucky to catch him. He reminds me of Paula Vogel before she won her Pulitzer Prize, someone who's really on the upswing, and we're going to hear about this guy for a long time, and we're going to get him here in Juneau, you know, before he's quite as famous as he's likely to be
at the burgeoning part of his
could
career.
Be, yeah, could be. I'm not making any promises
but
about
predictions.
His future prizes,
it's
but predictions.
It's a prediction.
And the writing is that good. Like, it's just beautiful.
Yeah, really, really amazing.
Cool.
So that'll be in May.
So three plays left
and
after Oklahoma.
Yeah, after
now,
Oklahoma.
If you were someone out there who didn't have tickets yet but wanted to see what these three plays.
There are three play packages.
There
and
are.
It
okay.
gives you all the privileges of subscription. It helps us out, too. We've been working really, really hard to increase the roster of subscribers, because that helps us out a lot, those pre-sales and knowing that you're coming. And what you get for subscribing, in addition to helping the theater, that's the best thing, but you also get flexibility. So you commit to a night, but if you need to move it, there's no charge to exchange to an equally priced night, just an upcharge if you're going to a more expensive night. And if you miss your night, you can slip in space available. Single ticket buyers have to pay to exchange, and if you miss your night, it's over. You don't get a refund
right.
of any kind. So it's really, really terrific, and you can buy in advance before single tickets go on sale, and we give you a 15% discount. So you can help us out a lot. We'd love to see a few more orders for the rest of the season.
Well,
so,
there you go. Exciting stuff happening at Perseverance Theater. There's a little preview into the rest of the season, but the rest of the run of Oklahoma is the next couple of nights.
You
this
do.
Is it.
That's right.
There are just a few tickets left for tonight's performance, 7:30. There's a few more tickets available for Friday night's performance. Saturday and Sunday right now is sold out, but as you're saying, Shona, if you really can't make it any other time, you can show up at the door, and often
we'll
you're
to
able
squeeze
to
in. Yeah.
Often you're able to get folks in. Yeah. All right. Well, there you go, you guys.
Thanks, Andy.
It's been a great run for Oklahoma so far. Good luck with the closing weekend of
Thank
Oklahoma
you.
And on to other amazing, really fun interesting plays happening at Perseverance. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks,
all
right.
Oh,
Oklahoma every night, my honey lamb and I sit alone and talk and watch a hawk making lazy circles in the sky. We know we belong to the land, and the land we belong to is grand. And when we say, hi-yip-i-o-y-a, we're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, okay.
Oklahoma's okay. Right?
Yep.
Hey, our auction coordinator, Jesse Herman Haywood's here with us in the studio. Jesse, just a couple of minutes. Here we had a little extra minutes here, but
I'm getting really excited about the auction.
Tell me a little bit about, yeah, there's a lot going on.
Action-packed day we have for Saturday. It's the only thing you're going to want to do. Nothing else you're going to want to do more.
Ignore anything else that might be happening. Yeah. Well, tell me about in general, what's happening. I've been seeing you taking pictures of artwork and all kinds of stuff.
Everybody should go online to www.kto.org and check out the auction catalog. It's amazing. Lots of fun stuff. I'm really getting excited. The talent is changing around a little bit, but sneak peek, Colette Costa and Will Muldoon will be auctioning off the 3 to 4 o'clock hour, which I'm assuming will be very entertaining and very fun. And we've just got lots of good items this year.
Sounds great. Artwork, I've seen all kinds of stuff, very cool stuff. And yeah, wait, give me another couple of sneak previews of other people maybe working together. That'll be pretty
fun.
You
and Jamie are going to be there, which is going to be funny, I hope.
Yes. A lot of inside baseball stuff there.
Yeah.
Like we'll just be going back and forth. Remember that time when?
Yeah. Patrice Omar and Luke Metcalf are going to be auctioning
They're
off.
They're great.
They are guaranteed to kill.
Yes.
I believe that they are going to be doing the 11 to 12 o'clock hour. I think it'll be really fun. You and Ben Brown are kicking off the auction.
It'll be fun. Shona, who was just here a minute
ago,
she's going to be on in the morning.
It's going to be also really exciting.
All right.
Ricky D and Grace Elliott are also going to be lined up.
So check out kto.org for the most update. The auction catalog is now online. It's there.
Yep.
It's ready to go. It's getting updates all the time. It's got pictures going up all the time of all the different auction catalog items out there.
And if you're somebody that still wants to donate to the auction, you're welcome to. Give me a call at 723-1884. You can still get into the catalog.
And check out the catalog and pre-bid.
Pre-bid.
By calling 586-1670, you can pre-bid on any item in the catalog and get that item in. Maybe you'll get the first hit on that item and you'll end up with it.
Exactly.
That'd be great.
And also, make sure to come by and check out physical items. A lot of the times, the pictures will not do the items justice, you know, like art and stuff. So come and check out the auction day. It's fun.
All right, Jesse, thanks so much for coming in.
Letting
us know a quick update on the auction.
Hey, well, all right, sir. Here we go there. What are they going to give for them? I have a $600 down here now, 10 and now, 25 and now, 35 and now, 50 and now, 60. Will they give me 60 now, 75? 75, another $85 on the bottom there. There was a boy in Arkansas who wouldn't listen to his ma when she told him he should go to school. He'd sneak away in the afternoon, take a little walk, then pretty soon you'd find him at the local auction barn. He'd stand and listen carefully, then pretty soon he began to see how the auctioneer could talk so rapidly. He said, oh my, it's do or die, I've got to learn that auction cry.
No, fast-talking auctioneer there. We got a fast-talking art-geneer here with us right now, Nancy DeTourney.
We're going to have to speed through this one, Andy.
Let's go. What's happening on First Friday? Now.
All
no,
right.
Let's
okay,
not do that.
Let's do Thursday.
Okay. What's happening? Yeah.
Tonight. Yeah. Okay. So you could go down and to the public library. Sarah Isto and Nicole O'Donnell are reading from their books. And King
we talked
Island,
to them. We talked to them already in the show. Yeah.
So we can speed past
yes.
that. King Island Christmas, this is its final weekend. It is at the Jack Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 3 p.m.
It's not a Christmas season without going to King Island Christmas.
You know, it's just beautiful. I was in there while they were rehearsing that last night, and it was just beautiful music.
Yep.
It is the last weekend of Oklahoma.
We just talked to Shona and Art about that. I'm sure you passed them on the way out.
I did.
Yeah.
And did they tell you there are no more tickets? So why are we talking about it?
There's tickets tonight, and there's some tickets for Friday.
Right.
But then Saturday and Sunday, they're sold out. But what Shona was saying is you can go and show up, and they have been able to get people in. So if you're desperate, you can go try that.
Right. And then
tactic.
You could just go next door and have a hamburger
right.
or something like that.
Worst comes to worst.
Okay.
You know.
Friday night, there is so much to do. Maybe we'll run through the rest of the week, and then we'll just say that Gallery Walk begins at the bridge down at Cycle, Alaska, and it goes all the way down to South Franklin Street, and it goes all the way up to Fourth Street. So we've put a map on the thing, and you just got to pace yourself.
Okay. You know? Well, give me some of the highlights of First Friday.
Okay. I think the highlight is going to be the Jack, of course.
Yes.
Naturally, there are several things happening
there's
there.
There's a ton of things happening at the Jack all at once.
it's
just a cacophony. Is that how you say
that? Yes. It's a panoply.
Yes.
We have Susan Christensen and Pia Riley from Petersburg. Wonderful stuff. They just hung it this afternoon. It's beautiful. They are opening in our gallery. In the lobby shop, we will have Stacey Gullifson with some new work that she's been doing. She's the Seek Chic Alaska Charms. And then we have the garden will be out there Sunday. The Arboretum will be there with some stuff. We will have the Reindeer Band playing carols in the main hall.
I don't know what that means. Okay.
I think it's brass.
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
And then Jazz and Classics is going to have their door open, and they will be selling Arlo Guthrie tickets. And then at 6:30, then we switch over to King Island Christmas. So start there and get your little.
There's the Jack.
Start there
That's
and get your little.
That's just the Jack.
That was just the Jack, and you could do four things all at once there. The Alaska State Museum will be open. Trove is open, way down at the other end. Invisible World is open. Erlinda's is open. Red Lady Jewels and Curios. Did you even know there was such a place? Chaco's is going to be open. They have a new place.
They have a new place across from the library, which is exciting because they got burned out of the Gastineau apartment building.
I didn't want to say hot new fashions, but there you have it.
There it is. Do you know what's happening at the Franklin Street Gallery at the Baranoff?
The Franklin Street Gallery has the usual people who are there, and they are joined by Jay Crondell, Nancy Brown, Jim Fowler, Sue Kraft, Alan Monroe, and Miguel Pratt. Jim Fowler also has a show at the Rookery. It looks beautiful. There are a couple of new places. Vanity has Alana Balam-Schwan. This is a little store that's upstairs from the tattoo parlor around the corner from Bee's Bakery. So if you're in the Franklin
Street. Yes, the High Tide Tattoos, above High Tide Tattoos.
Right, so go there.
It's kind of close to the old Jack headquarters.
Yes, it's upstairs from that, if you remember those miserable. It was lovely.
It's the best basement ever.
It was the best, most fun basement. Fairweather Princess. Alaska Brewing will be open, and the symphony will be there. There will be the Brass Quintet and Flutatious offering music while you can get a taste of the new Imperial Red IPA.
Yes. Delicious. I've had a taste of it myself.
And what do you think?
It is. It's a wonderful beer.
Okay,
it's delicious.
What's the highlight profile?
Well, it's an 8.5% alcohol content, so it sneaks up on you. So it's a sipping beer.
A sipping beer.
But it's delicious. It's a nice full-bodied IPA.
Okay.
Good, hoppy, good stuff.
So that's right in the center of the downtown area. You can stop in, get a little refreshment and revitalization while you're there. The Alaska State Library is going to have Arnie Weimer, and the Juneau Douglas City Museum, as we're calling it, CM.
CM, is, see you at the CM.
Yes, has Elizabeth Connect with a wonderful show, and they're also having a crafts project. So you can go there and make holiday crafts at the same time. Shoe Fly is having the Roller Girls with their calendars and shoe cookies.
That sounds like a can't-miss proposition.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Both of the Heritage Cafes are open. M.K. McNaughton did this thing where she was...
talked to her yesterday,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, so... And I want people to know that those applications are now online.
I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Go ahead and tell us what she did. Was she applied for a kind of a grant where she was able to go up and do paintings and sketches in a national...
In a park.
Park.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a federal program that allows artists to go up, and then the artist then...
makes
prints and comes back. And so she did it outside of Kotzebue.
They have like 15 different locations. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we just got the application request. So if people are interested, I think Constance Baltuck has done it as well. She went to Arizona but with a different program. But anyway, so as I said, Annie Kales has 5 different things. People, Alaska Robotics. Did you talk with those?
Just talked to them.
Yeah, we're good.
The new book by Sarah Asper-Smith and
the
Mitch
Red
Watley.
Dog is having prime rib, and you get free dessert.
Well, I hadn't heard about that. Wait a minute.
And they're going to have their store open, and you know, Adorn is there. I mean, really, people,
really. It's just too much.
I just
Juneau, we don't know when to stop.
Down.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so once you get finished pacing yourself through there.
Yeah, what's happening with the rest of the week here?
Yeah, there's a few other things to do. The Traveler Duo.
Well, I need to mention something. It might not be on your calendar, but KXLL is cooperating with Gold Town Nickelodeon and putting on a couple of music movies this weekend. One is a showing at 9:30 on Friday night, and that's called The Big Easy Express, which features mm-hmm. Mumford & Sons and Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros and Old Crow Medicine Show, which is a very cool thing. And the other one is Saturday at 9:30, and that is a new movie by Sigur Rós, which is an Icelandic band that sings in a made-up language. And they get ticked off if you ask them about the language.
Okay.
They're a strange group. But they're kind of geniuses, so you just got to let them be.
Okay.
Anyway, they're very cool.
It speaks to you in a way.
They
yes.
gave 12 different filmmakers a modest budget and asked them each to make a short film describing, showing how the music makes them feel. So it's not music videos. They're actual short films. It's kind of
about music,
about the music of Sigur Rós, and then it's played with the new album. So anyway, that's happening. So Friday night at 9:30 and Saturday night at 9:30, two very cool movies about music, about contemporary music that KXLL and Gold Town Nickelodeon are bringing to Juneau.
Their great stuff has been happening down there, I have
so
to
good.
Say. So
good. Colette has been just marvelous. Yes.
So at 7 o'clock, Traveler Duo is at Zephyr. We have... The Best Christmas Pageant Ever is being showed every Friday and Saturday for the rest of this month, and that is out at the little theater that's above Juneau Urgent Care. It's put on by the theater at Latitude 58. Wonderful story. You can sit in with the band at 9:30 on first Friday. Saturday, there's the Lego League thing going on at Centennial Hall.
Actually, I don't think that's at Centennial anymore. I think
that's
been relocated to Riverbend, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, well, they didn't relocate their notice to me on that subject, so I'm glad we discussed it.
I'm pretty sure
that's
what's happened.
Or we'd be in the wrong place again. There is pet photos and all that sort of stuff with Santa all at the various malls. There is a talk about Alaska's spectacular coastal zones and seaweeds. That's over at the Alaska State Museum. Part of their show about the coastal zone is over there. That's Saturday at 2. The Juneau Jumpers are doing their winter rope show, 7 p.m. at Glacier Valley. Holiday Pops, 2 showings of that. 7:30 is at Northern Light Church on Saturday. And at 3 p.m., I didn't put down what time it is on Sunday, but it is Holiday Pops is happening out at Chapel by the Lake, too. Juneau Jam Busters Ukulele Jam.
Well, hello. Say no more.
Yes. You know, this is happening on Sundays at 11 at Rockwell. And, you know, Jake Shimabukuro is coming. So if you're a ukulele fan, it's time to get going with that.
Is Jake, did Juno Jazz and Classics book Jake Shimabukuro?
I think that's for sure.
Oh, that is an exciting thing.
I think it's in February, so you and I will be busy, but
All right. Okay. Well, nice of them to book it while we're busy, but okay.
Yeah, but we'll go because we don't have to do anything.
No.
We'll just go and enjoy it. The Chief Petty Officer's thing, the 39th annual senior holiday dinner is over at the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall, the artist formerly known as A&B Hall, at 4 p.m. on Sunday. The Governor's Open House is on Tuesday from 3 to 6. There is Mud Rooms on Wednesdays at 7. There's a couple of lectures. The Juno World Affairs Council has something at 8 on Wednesday. You mentioned the auction, and I just wanted to point out that for those of you that did not get a table at Wearable Art, first of all, we're about half sold on the Saturday Wearable Art Show, but there will be a table, I believe, in your auction.
There is. I know that there is, yes. And Jesse just confirmed from the other room.
Yeah, so you can go online. I don't know what time it'll be, but stay tuned and you can bid for your table and get that. There's holiday teas happening at the Baranoff Hotel on Thursday. And it's just the holiday season.
It's the holiday season, and you did it. You wrapped it all up in a nice big bow for us. Nancy DeCherney from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. That is the always busy first Friday of December. Arts up for today.
And we'll see you with your track shoes on.
Yes, I know. The track shoes, well, it's going to have to be the extra toughs.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That long trip back and forth, it's going to be tough, but it's going to be worth it.
It's going to be good exercise, and you'll see all your friends.
All right. Well, here's some of the music of Jake Shimabukuro, who's coming to Juno. So exciting. And thanks to everyone who joined us and was on a Juno afternoon today. I'm Andy Klein. Thanks so much for listening in. And we'll join with headlines for NPR coming up next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear.